If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
Welcome to the live stream edition of We Want Winners, right after the 49ers beat the Cardinals in a game that, when it comes to greatest football games of all time, I don't think this game would be on that list, but it was very much necessary for the 49ers. It was much needed for the Cardinals to kind of be the team that screws up all of the stuff so the Niners could take advantage. I thought it was the kind of game the Niners needed to kind of get all of their stuff back together after last week. Rod, how happy were you to see, 15 penalties from the Cardinals or something crazy like that?
It was honestly a rough watch, and I was actually out at a bar, and you had the Rams in Seattle, yes, which was a very good, yes, game, and then the Chiefs and Broncos was actually the game that was featured in this bar. So I was kind of watching on a TV on the side because I had to be here to be able to give some kind of analysis. But yeah, it was over pretty quickly. You know, I actually honestly missed the kickoff return. I was in the bathroom and I come back and what is 7-0? What happened? So I had to get caught back up on that. But yeah, it was a penalty fest. What was it? It was a franchise record. They said 17 was a franchise record for the Cardinals.
There's a couple that records in this game. Did you see Jacoby Brissett's, yeah, record of most completions ever in a game?
No, I did not realize that he got that close.
I think he had 47 completions in this game, which set the all-time record. I think Jared Goff had 45. Yeah, Jacoby was 47 for 57, 452 yards for today, which meant that he put that thing up, man. 57 attempts in the night. Did the Niners even run 57 plays? I'm not even sure if they ran 57 plays.
You want to talk about an efficient performance by Brock and them? That was it was a nice return for him, I thought. I mean, it was never really. You know, in doubt. So it was not, you know, it was a good return for him. He looked good, I thought.
The story has been, you know, Brock's out, but the Niners have a really good backup in Mac Jones. And I actually, because I didn't see the broadcast last week, I guess there was some conversation about how can you take Mac out when he's playing so well? And like, you know, I think when we're slightly negative on Mac, not that people get frustrated, but like what people want to hear is like, Mac is great. And for a backup, Mac is fantastic. We would not be anywhere near where they are right now in the race if, say, who was the backup last year? I even forgot his name. Brandon, what's his name?
Yeah.
Whatever his name was. They probably actually have a losing record if not for Mac. So this is not to throw Mac under the bus, but you see what footwork and the ability just to create a little bit of extra time in the pocket does for this offense. And that is so important because Brock, you know, getting loose a little bit gives Kittle a little bit more time to get open, gives Juwan a little bit more time to get open. We talk about Brock being the gunslinger. He had some WTF throws for sure today, but it was because he was trying to make plays that maybe weren't there. And if the Cardinals were a little bit better, maybe they do get a couple of interceptions and the game is a little bit different, but they weren't. And so maybe that's part of the risk with Brock. It's like, okay, I know this team's not that good, so thus I can be a little bit more risky with the football. But you know, I don't think Brock had like this fantastic game, but if you kind of watch how the offense moves with him, with Mac, it's more stationary. It's like, boom, 8 yards, boom, 8 yards, boom, 8 yards. And with Brock, there's just an ability to make much bigger plays. And then we also saw it a little bit. It opens up the run game, and that was necessary. Now, Christian only got the ball 13 times today, so it's not like he had 20 carries. If he had 20 carries, he'd have been over 100. But he just looked, it just looked like there was just more stuff for him to do when he got the football today. So that is also the other big part of just Brock being QB1.
Well, I think you hit on it. You didn't say it specifically, but you hit on what I believe it is his willingness to go deep opens up everything else. I mean, that, you know, because with Mac, it harkened to the Jimmy G days where, you know, the defensive backs wouldn't even go into their back pedal because they knew this dude wasn't going to throw it deep. With Brock, you know, like you say, I say, he has that YOLO in him that you can't just assume that he's not going to chuck it down the field 50 yards, even if it's ill-advised. Yeah. You have to know that he'll do it. And so you have to be aware of that. And ability, it opens up things, and the defensive field isn't constricted, and Brock will throw it outside the numbers. There's no place that he's afraid to throw the ball, and that just opens up the offense. And I think we saw a bit of it today. Now it's hard to gauge that against the Cardinals because they aren't very good. But I walked away feeling that, you know, Brock has been on the sideline for 6 weeks watching. He knows for the rest of this season, they're going to have to put up 40 yep. points a game to be in these games. You know, the defense is, it's a problem area. And unlike the offense, like we saw, we've got a lot of pieces back. And other than BA now, we're pretty much fully constituted on mm-hmm. offense. We don't have that kind of – we don't have those reinforcements coming on defense. And, you know, we are going to have to score a lot of points to get where they want to be. And so, yeah, it was – like you say, it wasn't by any stretch his best performance or the best performance as a team, really. But we did what we had to do. We won. Just, you know, it is par for the course for this season. They've done what they needed to do. They've been beating the teams that they're supposed to beat. And what else can you ask for?
Yeah, it was if you could ask the football gods to give you the perfect scenario for today's game for the Niners to kind of get a little bit back on track. And we'll talk about this schedule in a second, because the schedule, I don't want to jinx anything, because I mean, even the kicker's getting hurt these days, but the schedule is pretty easy, especially these next three games. So we'll go into that in a second, because they're 7-4 now. 7-4 could easily become 10-4, as if you haven't looked at the schedule, we'll talk about it. But that this is kind of like, this had to be the get right game. And this is exactly what happened. And it was perfect, because last week was like the, oh my gosh, maybe we're not that good game. And this week was the get back game. So have to talk about Kittle. Kittle looked like the... He looked like the version of Kittle that we've been waiting for. Now he gets hurt, so he misses a few games. He comes back. He's not getting loose a lot, and he's a lot of it is him helping out the run game. And today was Kittle 6 for 64, 2 touchdowns. He was getting the ball in space and then picking up yards after the catch. he's running over dudes, and he's firing up that offense. Like he is kind of the temperature gauge, right? Like when he's fired up, it just fires up everybody else. And then last week when I was at the game, my son JJ was dying because he had prop thing he had for McCaffrey and touchdown. And every time the Niners would get close to the goal line against the Rams last week, they would bring in Brian Robinson. So he's dying. And so McCaffrey scores that first touchdown today. And I just texted him. I was like, well, there's one already for McCaffrey. He ends the day with three. So JJ just picked the wrong day to bet on a McCaffrey score. But there are your playmakers, right? Kittle and McCaffrey, they go in for multiple scores. Pretty Ricky himself, I think he had like one catch for 0 yards. So it was really, I don't know what happened there. Like if he wasn't getting open or if they were shading him, whatever it was, he didn't really show up in the box score. But when you have Christian and when you have George showing up like that, you kind of feel like the Niners can compete as long as they can score the football. And, you know, when it comes to the Rams and Seattle, as that game was today, those teams are just going to be really good. And the hope, and it's what we said it was, right? Last week we said when Sam Darnold turns into a pumpkin, we'll see how the Seahawks handle that. And the Rams were able to escape with the victory in a close one. So it's quite possible that, you know, as we get into these November, December months, Sam Darnold's not going to play as quality of football as he's been playing, which will hurt the Seahawks' odds as they move forward. So what did you see from Kittle, from CMC? Was it all Brock? Were there other things that you saw while you were watching this game?
Well, I was really, really focused on Brock because I just wanted to see how he looked. And he looked fine. He did not look like he was favoring anything. He looked good. George looked great, especially on that first touchdown. That was, you know, you talk about, you know, there's been a lot of chatter about, and I think you covered it much more elegantly than I would in terms of Brock and McCorkle. You know, I often advise do not listen to the national media because they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And the one that I saw that was forwarding this quarterback controversy nonsense was your guy. I try not to even think of his name or mention him. FS1, that guy, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Colin was the one who was forwarding this quarterback controversy nonsense, which, again, I'm the realist in the room who says, you know, I can think of 181 guaranteed reasons why there's not going to be a quarterback controversy. Yeah. You know, it's just and flat out. You know, Brock is just a better quarterback than McCorkle Jones. He just is. And just the mobility and the rollouts. And he is, you know, I'm not going to say he's perfect because I think, you know, honestly, if you gave Kyle True Serum, he wants a guy like Mac who's just going to, you know, be the automaton of the offense and just going to do what he's told to do. That is what Kyle, I think, dreams of. But
Jared Goff with McVay. Like, McVay's literally telling Goff where to throw the football on plays because, you know, he doesn't want Goff to have to think too much. It's like, the play's drawn here. Here's where you're going to throw it. And now throw it, and Goff is listening to him in the headset. But you know what? When you have that QB, especially with Mac, you know what you need is you need to invest in your offensive line, which the Niners have not done in how many years now. Mm-hmm. And I don't want this to be the norm where they just don't invest in the offensive line, because I imagine what Brock would be with a better offensive line. He'd be even better because he wouldn't have to create as much space for himself. But if you have Mac, that is first and foremost. You may have to have offensive linemen instead of skill position guys, just because he cannot move back there. And that is the difference. Yeah. Like, just by, you know, watching quarterback play in 2025, like, that is the main difference. You don't have these statues back there anymore.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. But I think going back to that podcast we listened to a couple seasons ago, I think that you need McVay and Kyle both need for things to be at their highest level. They need quarterbacks who are willing to, like, say, hey, man, I understand how it's written, but what I'm seeing out here on the field tells me I need to do something different. And right with Brock, and then, you know, you see down there in the Rams with Stafford, those guys aren't really guys that you're just going to, you know, they aren't robots. They play the game and they are able to make plays outside of the structure of the offense. And I think that's what those offenses need to take them to the next level. Because, I mean, Jimmy G was excellent at doing that. But you could, even Kyle was able to see there is a limit and a cap on the offense when you have a player like that. You need a player who is, as McVay saw down with the Rams, they got all the way to the Super Bowl, but he saw, you know, we're not going to be as good as we could be with this dude running the show. So they go get Stafford. We lucked into Brock, but I think that for this team to be, especially like you say, if you're not going to, you know, put five solid offensive linemen out there in front of him, you need somebody who can play off script. And Brock is that guy. Is he among the top players in the league? No, he's not. But I think that he is in that next level of player. I think he is a really, really good football player. And in this offense and with these playmakers, he gives you the best shot, I believe, to be that team that we want to be. I feel like with him in there, you know, all we got, if we get into the tournament this year, who knows? Again, I don't think we're as good as the Rams. I don't think we're as good as the Seahawks. I don't think we're as good as any of those top teams. But in a one-game scenario, I think Brock in this offense, if as currently constructed, knock on wood, gives you a shot. And that's all you could ask for at this point is that. Is can we just continue to roll along? And when we get to the end of the season, do we reasonably have a shot to win a game? And then once you win one, then it kind of snowballs from there. And I think from what I saw today, I feel good about this offense, you know, for whatever it's worth, you know, whatever that means, what I feel means. But I walked away impressed knowing that the Cardinals, this is the same team that got down 35-0 last week. So I have no illusions about who they beat today. But it was a good performance. It's the type of performance you're supposed to have against a team like this. And they got it. They did it.
I don't want to necessarily look ahead too far, but I do think it is an interesting exercise as we are 11 weeks into the season. And the Niners haven't even had a bye yet. So if you look at where the NFC is currently, now not everyone has played the same amount of games. The Niners are the eighth team in a 7-team race. Now, one of the teams who they will be probably competing with, unless the Chicago Bears flat out win the division, is the Chicago Bears. The Chicago Bears are 7-3, Niners are 7-4. And then they play each other in week 17, which is a Sunday night game. That will probably have something to do with the playoffs and where they shake out. The Niners, I think are the betting favorite right now to be the seventh seed in the NFC. So if you're adding up all the teams that you think make it, I think most people feel like maybe the Bears are a little bit less than what their record is. But I'm going to go through the top nine teams right now because there are only nine teams who are over 500. So the Rams are 8-2. The Eagles are 7-2. The Bears are 7-3. The Bucks 6-4. We played them close enough, but you know you could see why folks are excited in Tampa. They have some weapons there, and they have really good they have really good lines of scrimmage. The Seahawks 7-4, 7-3. Sorry, the Lions 6-3, the Packers 6-3, and then the Niners 7-4. And the Carolina Panthers 6-5. So those are all the teams who are over 500 in the NFC.
Don't sleep on that Panthers
and
team.
Niners play next week, that. Monday night.
We'll get to that game. I think that it's going to be for those three spots. Well, there's two spots at the end. It's going to be the two bottom north teams and the Niners. So it's however that shakes out. The Bears can hold on. I think it's going to be the Packers, the Lions, and the Bears in whatever configuration, however that ends up shaking out in terms of their division, and then the Niners. But you can't sleep on the Panthers because they, while they look a lot like we do, not stylistically necessarily, but they can run the rock. They have a very good run offense in a way that we kind of can pass the ball. And their defense isn't very good. So it's going to be the things that we don't do well in terms of playing against the run. That's going to be an interesting game next week. And I just think the way the schedule shakes out, you know, you hear again, I just think, you know, and I get fandom and, you know, we don't tend to see things as like typical fans in terms of, you know, there was a lot of talk this week about going like 12-5, which that is just crazy to me. Just as an NFL fan, these dudes running the table with this defense is going to, this team is going to be trick or treat for the rest of the season. And I'm one who believes when I look at that rest of the schedule, I would be happy if we're able to go 500, if we're able to go 3-3 the rest of the way. I think that is a wonderful season because I could see that Panthers game being a challenge. You say what you want about the Browns, that defense is good. And then with Jenkins, they're able to run the ball, which is something that I think is, I don't think statistically, it's a problem for us. If you can line it up and run it at us, we have a horrible time on the edges. There were several times last week where, you know, Tom Brady just like, where is the edge exactly? Because there just wasn't one. You know, so and that Jenkins kid, he is a monster. He is a really good football player, regardless of what's happening to quarterback, which is a shit show in Cleveland. That could be a tough game. That Bears game is going to be interesting. The Colts are a good football team, and Jonathan Taylor is probably, in a fair world, which we know the NFL is not, he's probably the MVP of the league. And guess what? He runs the ball. It's just, again, these are going to be, they're going to be, and then of course we've got Seattle at the end. So I think while I was hopeful leaving today, I don't by any means, again, it's just the notion that we're not going to lose, we'll lose one game the rest of the season, that, you know, that would be wonderful. But I just don't think that is the reality of this team. I just don't think our defense is good enough to carry that out, and that we'll have a clunker here and there. But I don't. But saying that, you know, after last season, hell, if you had told me that we would win 10 games and make the playoffs, I'd be hella happy with that. So again, it looks like here they're saying that the playoff probability is like 84% for us, which is primarily laid out in the fact that, like you say, there are very few teams that are really, you know, again, all the teams that you mentioned above us are the ones that are going to be in that 10 or 11 game area. It's the ones that are above us and us. And then maybe, you know, I don't really believe in the Panthers either, but they're a good football team and they're only a game behind the Bucks at this point for their division. So while I think the Bucks are going to win the division, that's a scrappy football team. I've watched more of the Panthers than I probably should, because I've, you know, got Rico Dowdle in a couple of leagues. So you know, how fantasy makes strange football watching. So but they are not an awful football team, and I say that to say that I think we are a better football team than them, but I don't think that, you know, I don't think that we as Niner fans and definitely as the team should just think that you know, write that down in pen as a win, because I could see a world where that's a tough game next week.
So let's quickly look at these games, and then we'll come back to today's game and we'll wrap up today's game, because there's still some stuff to talk about. But I just think it's so interesting because you get to 7-4, you have your offense back, you make it so that BA is kind of necessary. So if you're instead of 7-4 and you're 5-6, then maybe there's less of an urgency to put BA on the field, right? You're like, okay, like maybe it's not worth it. At 7-4, with the game, some of the games coming up, we may see this dude sooner than later. And then we may feel like, okay, like we are at full strength here. So the next games. So we have, like I said, Carolina 6-5. Who would have thunk it that the Panthers would be in the running? And this is at home. So this is a game that the 49ers probably need to win, or they probably we should expect them to win, as long as there's not any crazy injuries coming out of this game that we haven't heard about yet. And then you go into Cleveland, a place that has not been very nice to us in the past. Somehow they seem to lose this Cleveland game when they're supposed to win it. And at this point, I mean, I hope for Shedeur Sanders' case that he is not playing QB, because the worse he plays, the worse the media is going to be on this poor kid. But, you know, their situation is, like, from a quarterback perspective, is really bad, which is kind of good for the Niners defense. But at the same time, if you're the Browns, you may think that the Niners defense is actually good for your quarterback situation. So that's an interesting game. It almost feels a little trappy to me. And, you know, the Browns are 2-8, and you should go into that place if you are a good football team and beat them. But for whatever reason, that game feels a little trappy to me. And then you have the bye. Thankfully, finally, we get the bye. And then you have another game that you really should win, the 1-9 Titans. Like, they should blow the Titans out, especially at home.
I'm going to get somebody, though. I don't think that they're going to go 1-16. So somebody.
So that could be another trap game.
That's right. That is a team that I look at, and they're in it just about every week. Like today, they lost at the buzzer to Houston, which is a team that I watch way more than I should, but I just love D'Amico's defense. They are great. Their offense is awful, especially with Davis Mills, but that defense is one of the best I've ever seen. They are so good, and they needed the entire 60 minutes to beat the Titans. So I look at that team and that quarterback, and I say that there's no way that they go 1-16. They're going to get somebody, and you just don't want it to be you. I don't want it to be the Niners to be the ones that sleepwalk against the Titans and get to be, you know, be their second win. So again, it's one, and maybe that's just the worrier in me that I just hope that we go in there and we handle our business against them and not be, don't be the ones that, and I think the fact that they come here helps, will come to the, to Levi, is better than playing in Nashville.
Now here, the Indy game is such an interesting one. The Indy is 8-2, but here's who they play to finish out the season. At Kansas City, home against the Texans, at Jacksonville. Jacksonville put a beating on San Diego today, I think.
Yeah, it was
at
rough.
Seattle, home against us, and then they play the Jags again, and then the Texans to end the season. So they do not really have an easy game left on the schedule, and I'm not saying that that means that they're not going to be who they are right now. I'm just saying it's going to get a little tougher for them. So we will, we'll see where they are when we actually get to them. They may not be, you know, as good record wise as they currently are right now. And then after Indy, then we, like we said, Chicago comes here and then Seattle comes here to end the season. So it, you know, if the not like this whole season is really about, can they take care of business? No, they haven't been able to take care of business for a few different reasons. So yeah, thinking like, okay, can we go 4-2 to finish this thing? That I think, you know, the if you are an optimistic person, that would be fantastic.
That would be
but
great.
But like you said,
that would be great.
You kind of have to think about it in the realm of how the season has gone so far, and 3-3 seems a little bit more realistic, though. I think the, you know, the little carrot at the end of the stick, when you see a team like the Titans, when you see Carolina, you're like, man, we really need to get both of those. Let's say they get both of those. Do you then get greedy? Can you get greedy with this team? Is this team capable of being greedy? Because then some, then the something falls off and then we're back to like, oh man, now we're playing Luke Gifford at, you know, many snaps like he had to play today because they were so injured, though Nick Martin also got on the field today, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, it's just, it's, you know, because even in a win, we're talking about the fact that Jacoby Brissett had 452 passing yards, and we did not get a sack, and it, we had like four quarterback hits, you know, so the pass rush is just going to be a problem for the rest of the season. And there are teams that that could be problematic against it because, you know, those, you know, you look at those good teams that we have let or teams with good records. If we're, I'm not going to argue whether or not the Bears are a good team with you, because if you want to say they're not, that's fine. But the teams with good records, the key to beating those teams, Caleb and Daniel Jones and Sam Darnold, if you're still not a Sam Darnold believer, is you have to put pressure on those guys. And we don't have the capacity to put pressure on those guys. And so the flip side of that is to how do you get beat by those guys? As you stand back there, you can't stand back there and let Caleb just decide where it is he's going to go with the football. You will lose because he is a talented dude. You have to speed him up. You have to give him questions defensively that he can't answer. And I am a definite believer in Saleh. He is just kind of playing at this point with two hands tied behind his back. And it is one of those things where I've always said that, you know, Jims and Joes are greater than X's and O's in the NFL. And this is a proof positive of that, is that no matter how great your scheme is as a coach, you have to have a certain level of player to execute it. And it's just, it is a fallacy, this whole next man up. Because that, what that assumes is that you have 53 or, you know, however many when you account the practice squads, that you have that level of player throughout your roster. And that's just not the case. Your 53rd man is just not as good. And again, you talk about with our team, there is no, I mean, no disrespect to Tatum Bethune, but there really is no next man up for mm-hmm. Fred Warner. Get out of here. There's no next man up for Nick Bosa. I mean, those guys are top of the food chain yeah. players. So there is going to be just naturally a drop off. Robert Beal is a drop off from Nick yeah. Bosa. And that's no disrespect to Robert Beal. It's just that is. And then once you start, when those guys start to get hurt, Curtis Robinson is a wonderful guy. But, you know, and he had 12 tackles today. So obviously he's a NFL quality player, but at a certain point attrition is just a real thing, and they've done a yeoman's job, the coaching staff. I think Kyle has done one of his best jobs. I think Sala has probably earned another head coaching mm-hmm. job. You know, that said, they are just the cupboard is exceedingly bare, and they just you really can't afford any more injuries. I mean who else can possibly go out you know this season to make it's just they need these guys to be healthy. And like you say, somebody, you know, having something like BA, having that carrot in your back pocket, is it's tantalizing. You know, I wonder at this point when or if the window, the practice window, is going to open for him. Because, I mean, the practice window doesn't even necessarily mean that he's going to come back to play. But you have to get to at least that point for any of it to make any difference. So, you know, it's this game, while it was a very – It was a feel good game for me, but you know, I couldn't ignore that there were still some warts that were there that were glaring, and just things that I don't think you know, there's things that won't get fixed.
In looking at the Cardinals stats, they had two guys with double digit catches. Michael Wilson had 15 catches today. Trey McBride had 10. That is pretty amazing. That just shows you, one, how far the Niners were ahead, but also, two, it just shows you that, you know, when the Niners are just kind of sitting back, like they're just going to get picked apart in normal instances. And then when you're just rushing four and you're sitting everyone else in the backfield, it gets worse. Like I was just like waiting for this. I was like, man, can we fast forward this clock a little bit? Like sometimes you listen to podcasts on like 1.5 speed. Mm-hmm. Like, can we 1.5 speed this clock?
Exactly. Yeah. Can we just have a running clock? Let's just have a running clock for the rest of this game.
So I wanted to point out the special teams were wild today. So as you mentioned, you missed it, but Sky Moore takes the kickoff back 98 yards. I think it was down to the one, and then McCaffrey scored on the very first play of the game for the offense. So that was awesome to see, because that is like a unicorn for the 49ers in the special teams, as like breaking out big plays. And I don't want to not talk about another one, because Brian Robinson took one 42 yards. There was only two real returns for the Niners, and Sky went 98 and Brian Robinson went 42. So great field position, thanks to the special teams. And then when you look at Eddie Pinheiro, Latino Heat, he misses two extra points. He kicks three field goals. Kyle set them up for a 62 yarder that got blocked, but they got penalized for running into the snapper. And so then Eddie got to another chance. But like the fact that Stoudes missed four extra points yet is perfect on field goals is wild to me.
Did you hear anything about the hamstring?
Only that they went for two late because he couldn't kick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not great.
Par for the course. Well, par for the course this
well,
season.
There was a moment, I think it was his own, it was their kickoff where all of a sudden, one of the blocks where he's actually trying to get involved in the play, and you just see him end up on the ground, and these dudes are helping him up and kind of laughing. And I was like, he might be shaken up more than they realize. You know, the other thing about the penalties, and Shelvin reminded me, there were some shady penalties on the Cardinals in this game. I kind of thought that there were a couple shady ones last week, though I don't think it really tilted the game in any way. But I mentioned last week Puka's first score, where they blocked early and one of the offensive linemen just grabbed somebody and pulled him down. When something that is not called means touchdown for their team, you kind of feel a little something. But in this game, it was like every time it seemed like Arizona started to get a little bit momentum, they shot themselves in the foot. And then you go back and you look at the replays and you're like, yeah, I'm not sure that was a penalty. Now, when you have as many penalties as they did, the numbers say that you might have a couple that are not, you know, exactly by the book or whatever, or maybe they were two by the book, but there were a couple where, you know, Niners are getting a nice little call there for offensive linemen dominating them in a sense. And then it's like, oh, offensive holding. I was like, are we sure that was offensive holding?
That had to be a hold. It just looked so, yeah, it was one of those things. And that, you know, I know that it was a game that, you know, ended up being a 20-plus win. But that the callback of that touchdown on Brown, that was pretty big. The on the tight end, on that 60-yarder, that was that was kind of pivotal at that particular point in the game in terms of them coming back. So he said it was a rough day for them. But like you said, when you have 17 of them, it's hard to say that, you know, maybe it should have been 20, or maybe it only should have been 15. Yeah.
There was another play where Higgins fumbles at the one, and the Niners pick it up. Now they didn't do anything with the ball. It was just, you know, three and out. And then the Cardinals came back and scored after that. But it was just like moments like that where, you know, a big play here kind of gets the team fired up and might change the trajectory of the game. And then, nope, Niners make a big play. I don't even know who's the person who made that hit. I don't even remember who made the hit, but I think Keon White picked it up maybe. But yeah, that was a great play on the one. I think it was Upton Stout actually knocked the ball loose. And so it's just stuff like that where, you know, you got to shout out some of the really good plays, the timely plays, in a day where they get thrown on for over almost 500 yards. But Upton Stout made that play.
Yeah, a couple. And it's one of those things where, you know, he put the ball up 57 times and they got two interceptions, yes, which was great to finally get, you know, to help the turnover margin. But I mean, golly, when you get that many cracks at it, it's rough. And again, I hear the cries online that they were garbage time and they were, you know, it was one of those things like last week with Mac. You know, you could make that same argument that, you know, a lot of those stats that we put up were again while the Rams were up two or three scores the entire game. So I mean, you know, you have to, you know, you have to, you know, you take those stats with a grain of salt. Like I argued all week too much. As a matter of fact, I hate myself for the fact that, you know, people are telling me about, see, again, you know, just the whole conversation that like Brian Robinson should somehow be getting more carries than he should. It's like, well, you saw on that one drive, it was 4 carries for 24 yards and a touchdown. They were in dime. We were up 3 scores. What are we doing here with this Brian Robinson? There's no point that I look at any one play and I say, you know what? I'd rather have Brian Robinson in there than the best back in the conference. Get out of here. Christian McCaffrey is Christian McCaffrey, and Brian Robinson is Brian Robinson. And, you know, I think an 80-20 split is just about fine. Right. It's how I feel
especially,
about it.
Especially on, you know, a day like this where, you know, Christian scores 3 touchdowns, and it's almost like he didn't even get the ball that much. Like, he did the usage rate was pretty low. And so, you know, it felt like they escaped without him really taking too much damage. And then, you know, there were moments where Robinson was in the game and I was like, yeah, this is totally fine because, you know, when Christian comes back in, then they'll hit him on certain things. And when Robinson is in, then they'll call things that they think are really good for him. And it's all relative. Like you can't go, because Brian Robinson did this in these limited moments, that means if he gets 70%, then it all equates out to, you know, whatever the average is. It doesn't work like that. Like, teams will go, oh, if Brian Robinson is in, then we can actually do this defensively and we can take something else away because we don't have to worry about Christian coming out of the backfield as much. It's you can't just sub in like that. It's not AI.
And it's one of those things that, you know, I heard Bobby Turner talking about is that, you know, there's a pressure on him because a lot of what Kyle does just holistically, offensively, is based on Christian being on the field. And it's like something that he has to manage is like, you know, if you go 2 plays with Brian Robinson, there's a wait a minute. You know, he knows that he's going to hear Shanahan in his ear, you know, if that 3rd play is run and CMC is not in there. He's just so important to both the run and the pass game. And then, like we've talked about before, just the gravity, like Steph Curry effect. There's an effect that his presence has that you miss when Brian Robinson is in there. There are things that the defense just simply doesn't have to worry about with Brian Robinson in there versus Christian McCaffrey. And that is it benefits everybody eats because of the presence of Christian.
You know, what's also interesting is if that is the case, if Shanahan calls like every play as if Christian is in the game, or, you know, every play is important enough for Christian to be in the game, they haven't really tried to get somebody in the draft who is also really good out of the backfield. Like, that hasn't been a target. Like, they've gotten Garendo, who fits more like, you know, running backs of the earlier Shanahan years, like Radio Raheem. But, you know, Brian Robinson, like, I see him as a utility. Like, he's a fantastic utility, but he doesn't resemble Christian's game very much. And so, like, it's kind of interesting, like, oh, is there, and it's not like you can find these dual threat running backs like anywhere, right? But, you know, having a Debo when they did have a Debo and who could actually do some of those things like Christian, I'm sure that was a really big thing for them. It's like, oh yeah, like we could do all these different things with these guys and we can plug them in and they could kind of resemble each other, but they don't have that right now. So it's like when Christian is in the game, it's almost like the defense just has to go, okay, like, what are we going to do here? Versus when you have Robinson in the game and then the offense is like more predictive, you know, you can kind of predict what's going to happen. So it's kind of interesting.
He's not, you know, you don't have to worry about Brian Robinson 20 yards down the field the way you do Christian.
All right. Shout out also, you mentioned Demo's interception. Malik Mustafa went up and got one, and he took out Renardo Green at the same time. He's like, he went up to get it, and Renardo Green was like turning, and I don't even know if Renardo Green saw the football. So as Mustafa made the interception, I saw Green kind of was getting up a little slowly. But, you know, two interceptions that for a team that does not intercept the football at all, that hopefully that kind of gets them feeling okay to offset giving up so much yardage. Again, we mentioned Nick Martin got in the game. He had seven tackles. Curtis Robinson led the team in tackles with 12. He actually had to replace Tatum Bethune, who went out early. I think it was an ankle. D. Winters was noticeable on the field today. You saw him. He was chasing guys. So, you know, I like it when, you know, because a lot of their offense and the way that Brissett could complete 47 passes is a lot of stuff is short to backs, to wide receivers, you know, running short routes or screens or whatever. And so D. Winters is going to be much better in that style because he can go chase those guys. He's just as fast as those guys. So I thought that stood out pretty nicely. But other than that, you know, defensively, when you have to play Luke Gifford as much as you did, and this is, you know, nothing against Luke Gifford, but I don't even think when he signed with this team, he thought he was going to play this much. But he's got to be on the field because they just cannot keep linebackers healthy. And then, you know, just hope that Latino Heat isn't too banged up. And Shelvin said he was trying to stretch towards the end of the game, and he said it just hurt too much to even stretch out the hamstring. So that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, that really doesn't. It's interesting, you know, how we as fans sometimes we'll say one thing, like, you know, we've got all this faith in Robert Saleh, and then we question why he's playing Gifford over Martin. Well, if you trust him, then there has to be a reason.
Yeah, that's got to be what it is. Like, he's going to make less mistakes.
It's got to be, you know, and it's one of those things where either you trust him or you don't, as far as the coordinator. And I would love to see the young players play, obviously, this year in a season like this. But they're still 7-4. So, you know, they're trying to win football games. So you're not going to put the Hulk out there just to get him some reps. If, you know, now this would be probably have been against a different, but we really honestly haven't played many games like this season where, you know, we just won by, you know, 20 points and it wasn't even close. It wasn't even as close as the score indicated. This is not like something that happens often. So if you can get Nick Martin some reps in games like this, that's great. But if he doesn't feel comfortable having him out there in high leverage moments, then you have to trust there's a reason, because hell, he's worked with him, you know, every day for 9 months now. So, you know, you just hope that whatever it is, he gets it cleaned up so that he can earn those reps out there. Same thing with, who is it? Cowing on the other side. I think he's back.
Well, I know Watkins was inactive today after being active.
Okay.
And the reason is obviously because Ricky was back. But again, it Shanahan trusts DeMarcus Robinson and Kendrick Bourne and Sky Moore and these guys who are more veteran than he does the rookie who would like to see him, you know, show something. But even when BA comes back, then he's going to take another step backwards. So, you know, at this point,
when you say, you know, I know you hear, if you listen in to the radio at all, you hear Ryan talking about the fact that Watkins is the fastest player on the team. Well, and I mean, obviously we could use that speed, but if you've been around here for any length of time, you know that rookies have a hard time getting on the field with Kyle, and he's not going to just put you out there just to put you out there. You have to earn your way out there. And I guess he just hasn't. And I'm comfortable with that because, like you say, you know, he has, this is not like something he's, that's new. You know, you have to, you know, you have to block, you have to, you know, and you have to be, you know, up on your responsibilities to get out there on the field. And, you know, that's his job, is to, you know, to be that guy and to work his way to that point. You know, it was, it's because it's interesting that Debo and BA, you know, for all of their, you know, kind of struggles, you know, BA was in the doghouse early, but they got out and played on as rookies to whatever extent. So if you're good and you do what you're supposed to do, you will get out there. So hopefully, you know, they can work on that. But I trust these coaches at this point that if they're not out there, there's a reason.
The other interesting inactive player today was Cleveland Farrell. And I don't know why. I'm guessing they just think White is a better player, but you know, he did. There's just something to keep an eye on. I think it was a little surprising that he was inactive, but All right. So next week, Monday night, we'll have to be back after the Monday Night Football game. Niners and Panthers, who knew that when they put that game together that you would have two teams with winning records heading into a Monday Night Week 12 game, which is kind of crazy.
They're smarter than I am, because I would have never thought that that would be an interesting Monday night game. But yeah, here we are.
You know, I think I was at the last game that the Panthers were here because Christian was on the Panthers. I'm trying to remember who the quarterback was. So there was a play where Bosa jumped and tipped the ball in the air, and then he caught the interception and he was running down the field. He didn't score a touchdown, but he ran a decent amount down the field, because I was actually there one of the first times that Crystal and I had, actually maybe the only time that Crystal and I have been to a Niner game together. So I just, for whatever reason, remember that. I think that was the last time the Panthers were here. So that was like 2019. So it's been 6 years or whatever that the last time they were here.
Wow.
So yeah, should be you know, it's a pretty important game. So I hope to see a lot of the excitement around it, and people not treating this as if the Niners should walk through these guys for sure.
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, because they are a solid football team.
Yeah. All right. So we'll be back next week. Shout out to Shelvin for hanging out in the chat, and I also saw our Rams buddy here, Jim Everett the Great, was hanging out at least for a little bit. He was unhappy with the referees in the Rams Seahawks game, it looks like, based on his comment. But appreciate everyone who's checked us out live on YouTube. Appreciate y'all who listened on the audio feed. We'll be back Monday night at some point after 49ers Panthers to talk about that game, and hoping you know, really hope they this Brock thing, this Ricky thing, like I'm hoping for that good juju to come back and that they start playing really well, because that would be nice to see the offense just kind of be like, defense, we got you, jump on our back,
we know you
guys are missing your guys, but you know, we're gonna have to put you on our backs here. So that's what I'm hoping. All right, for Rod, I am Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.